approach or speak. One man nodded in passing but kept his eyes lowered. Once, on Luna Street, identified as such by a rusted old street sign, Dean spotted a deeply tanned boy who looked to be his own age, and he walked over to speak. However, the child responded to his greetings in Spanish, and Dean returned to Ryan and Christie, wearing a frown of disappointment. The houses along the streets were a crowded sprawl of color and design. Some were in good repair, others obviously abandoned. The narrow streets were the dividers between multiple grilled balconies, brass-studded doors housed in ornate doorways, and an explosion of colorful flora. His own curiosity working against him, Ryan returned the tour book to Dean and asked the boy to go ahead and tell them what they were looking at. Meanwhile, he scanned doorways and walked through buildings fronting on two streets and noted dead ends. Christie felt as though she had been on the receiving end of an unexpected cron jump. According to Dean's information booklet, Old San Juan dated back to the year 1521, and the architecture that remained intact along the streets and alleyways supported the claim. A mix of Spanish colonial mansions mingled with colorful plazas and shops.
Blue.
What?
First time since I was a little girl back in Harmony, I can remember the sky being the right color. My Uncle Tyus, he said the world above us was supposed to be blue. And he always made a point of showing me the right hue in picture books or bits of old vids. I've seen the sky colored blue before, but it was always dark, like a storm was brewing. More often than not in the Deathlands, sky was orange, red, pink. You got used to it, but I always wanted to see that color of blue Tyus told me about. Nice to see he was right, as usual.
Natives say that the sky in Puerto Rico is bluer than any other place on Earth, and the white clouds are whiter.
Ryan stooped to pick a smallish, bright red flower that had grown up in a bare patch of dirt near the curb.
Doesn't surprise me.
You should give it to the lady, senor. It matches the crimson of her hair.
They looked up to see a heavy-set man in a straw hat looking down at them from a second-story window.
Yeah, I was going to do that.
Ryan warily handed the flower to Christie.
Thank you.
Christie was slightly annoyed at having her private time with Ryan and Dean interrupted by the native's appearance. She'd been charmed by rogues before and knew the drill. Still, her mutability to read a person was giving her an all-clear signal regarding the man looking down, as opposed to the conflicting impressions that radiated like flaming tendrils from the always smiling Silas Jamevu.
That flower is the Maltese cross, named because the petals of its flowers have the shape of the cross. You can see them if you look closely.
Hot pipe, he's right, Dad. Check it out.
Dean pointed at the flower excitedly.
Thanks for the tip.
Ryan turned to go, but the man wasn't to be put off so easily.
My name is Soto. Might I ask who you are?
Ryan turned back.
Ryan Carter, Christie Roth. My boy, Dean. We're staying at El Morro.
That explains much. We don't see newcomers around here very often. At least, not human newcomers.
Ryan and Christie both wondered what the man meant by such an odd statement, but didn't inquire further.
We get around a lot. We tend not to stay in one locale for very long.
Ah, that explains your weapons.
Ryan had already dropped a hand to rest lightly on the butt of the Sig Sauer.
Man has to be armed and ready to defend himself.
Oh, I agree. It's just in old San Juan, we rarely have need of such means of self-defense. At least, we had no need until recently.
That's twice you've dropped some kind of hint. If something's on your mind, say it.
Soto waved a hand, batting at the air in a submissive motion.
Please, don't get upset. I have no wish to cause trouble for you or your family. Why don't I come down where we can speak more privately?
Are you alone?
Yes.
Okay, we'll wait.
Soto leaned out through the window and pointed with his left hand to the side of the building.
If you open the gate and go around the side, you'll see a garden. I'll be coming down the back stairs.
The garden along the wall was overflowing with flowering plants and ornamental bushes, hibiscus, gardenia, bougainvillea, jasmine, oleander, golden trumpet, cup of gold, and the queen of the night, so called because its pale, fragrant blossoms open only after dark. Flaming red poinsettias, 16 feet tall, were growing wild at the edge, where the ground met the concrete of the partition.
Gaia, but this land is beautiful.
Thank you, senorita.
Soto stepped gingerly down the steps. He wore a white shirt, sandals on wide, flat feet, and near-white blue jeans. A pair of binoculars dangled from his neck. There was no visible blaster on his hip, although a large knife hung from his belt in a leather sheath. The straw hat was perched at an angle on his head.
So, you wanted to talk?
I did, Mr. Carter. There is a darkness here in Old San Juan an outsider such as yourself might be able to help eliminate. A man with blasters and experience.
Experience?
In dangerous affairs.
Guess you could say that. Just so you know, I'm not a Mercier sect man. I don't kill for profit.
That is good, since I have no currency to pay you with. What I can offer is food and drink and the story.
Ryan glanced at his wrist chron. He'd reset the timepiece for local time that morning before leaving El Moro. It was high noon.
Reckon we can spare a moment to hear you out and break your bread?
Good. Now come. A cafe is not far from here.
The cafe was small and intimate, open at the front to allow natural lighting, yet still sheltered enough to provide shade from the blistering heat. When Ryan had spoken of breaking bread, he hadn't realized how accurate his statement would prove to be, since lunch was indeed hunks of freshly baked bread with sweet-tasting sides of butter for flavoring. A bowl of fruit was placed next to the platter of bread, and all were given water to drink. They had been joined by another man whom Soto had introduced as Jorge, and the two made an interesting contrast. Where Soto was plump and compact, Jorge was tall and muscular. Where Soto's clothing was heavily worn and drenched in sweat, Jorge was bare-chested and wore a pair of clean nylon swimming trunks. The taller man didn't share in his friend's efforts to be friendly, and he gazed across the table with open distrust. When first introduced, there had been multiple exchanges of Spanish, some heated, before Soto had turned with his usual smile and asked them to sit.
There a problem?
No, not yet.
Your food. It is good?
Ryan chewed on a piece of the blackened bread.
Yeah, it's good.
Probably not as fine as the fare you've been dining on in El Moro.
No, it's not, but bread is bread.
Christy attempted to clear the air.
You said something about a story?
I did. There is a creature that appeared here in Puerto Rico many years ago, before the final war, the conflict that destroyed the world. First found with blood-stained teeth crouched at the side of a goat, the creature was quickly dubbed El Chupacabras, the goat sucker, since the poor animal the demon had killed was completely drained of blood.
Soto paused as Ryan broke off another hunk of the bread.
Go on.
The name of the goat sucker soon proved to be misleading, since other carcasses began piling up in this region of the island. Sheep, cattle, horses, rabbits, cats, dogs, chickens, and many other recently killed animals were discovered daily for weeks afterward, and all of them shared the same symptoms of attack. Each dead animal had small wounds, punctures, through which all of the blood had been sucked out.
Wow. Sounds like a horror vid I once saw.
So your goat sucker was some kind of predator. That was dozens of years ago. What's it got to do with the here and now?
El Chupacabras was no ordinary predator, Señor Cordar. Here, I have a drawing.
Soto stood and took a leather pouch from one of his pockets. Unfastening the pouch, he removed a folded sheet of paper and handed it to Ryan. The one-eyed man unfolded the sheet, revealing a detailed drawing of a frightening-looking beast standing on a pair of muscular hind legs. Covered in coarse black hair, the chupacabras had a series of sharp spines running up its back. Clawed hands were at the ends of stubby arms, and under the arms were bat wings. In the drawing, the creature faced outward, showing an oval-shaped head with a long jaw and pointed chin. Huge eyes stretching across the upper half of its forehead rested above two tiny nasal slits. A mouth of jagged fangs was hissing a silent warning.
Damn, looks like some kind of mutie.
Ryan spoke more to Christy and Dean than the two Puerto Ricans at the table.
No such animal has ever existed in nature, my friend.
So, what's the problem? If this thing was running around more than 100 years ago, how can Dad help you out?
Because I've got a triple bad feeling El Chupacabras is back, Dean. That's why you're telling me all this, right?
Yes, El Chupacabras is back. Only he is no longer content to kill our animals. Now he kills our women, our men, and our children.
You called it a mutiny. I know of mutants. Do you think El Chupacabras was created by man, Senor Goddard?